This week on Texas Scorecard Radio, we'll talk to Brandon Waltons about the first real evidence we have about how the 2018 election landscape is shaping up in Texas. We'll interview Senator Don Huffines about the corruption scandal at Dallas County Schools. We'll check in again with Kerry Cheshire as the Texas Scorecard team goes on the trail. And we'll close with a commentary from Michael Quinn Sullivan on the one question you should ask each candidate before you go to vote. Welcome back to Texas Scorecard Radio. I'm your host, Tony McDonald. In the 1836 studio this week for the news roundup, I have Brandon Waltons, Capital Bureau Chief for Texas Scorecard. Brandon, you're here to tell us a little bit about campaign finance reports, yes. The filing deadline here in January. And let me play devil's advocate. Why should anybody, you know, a real honest-to-goodness citizen, red-blooded American, not a capital dweller, maybe like you or me, why should they care about this issue? It seems very inside baseball.
Well, sure, but campaign finance reports, which have come out this week, they actually can tell you a lot about a candidate, good or bad. Is their campaign viable? Are they out there working hard? If they only have a few thousand dollars, you know, you have to ask yourself, are they really out there working hard? How hard are they going to work when they're in office?
Right.
It tells you what the establishment is doing. And most importantly, it tells you where they're getting their money from. Who are they?
Who are they going to answer to?
Right, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Is it the lobby or is it individual donors in the district, grassroots organizations? Where is that money coming from? We're finding out a lot about that this week.
Yeah, and we're kind of gearing up towards the March Republican primary. Of course, in Texas, very few races are decided in the general election in November. Pretty much a Republican state. There are those little Democrat enclaves, but overwhelmingly we're Republican. And so this Republican primary is the thing. And it's right around the corner. And so here we have kind of an idea of how things are shaping up. And it really, from our perspective, the perspective of these reports, is looking pretty good for conservative challengers. Let's talk a little bit about what we're seeing there.
Yes, absolutely. We're seeing a lot of great news for conservative challengers to establishment lawmakers who have been there for several terms. Brian Slayton going up against Dan Flynn has more than twice the amount of cash on hand.
Rematch, kind of east of Dallas there.
Yes, Armin Mazzani, who's challenging Representative Giovanni Capriglione up in Tarrant County, also has more than twice the amount of cash on hand as Capriglione in that race.
Yeah, that's kind of surprising. Another one, Jason Villalba, kind of we call him the radio clown on the Texas legislature, always puts his foot in his mouth or does something. He's being beaten by a conservative challenger
as well. Yes, Lisa Luby Ryan. She actually announced last week that she had raised $270,000. She has more than three times as much cash on hand as Jason Villalba.
Wow, so it sounds like there's a lot of enthusiasm for these conservative candidates. Let's talk about the other side of the aisle, other than these conservative challenger, things in the Republican primary. Obviously, what the Democrats do in the state is relevant in some ways. Kind of some anemic fundraising challenges at the top of the ticket there.
Oh, yes, to say the least. So we've heard for a while from political pundits that, 2018, this is going to be a year of a Democrat wave.
Anti-Trump wave.
Yes. Yes, exactly. And it if you look at the top of their ticket, the gubernatorial race, the candidates have put out their finance, and it's not very good for the Democrats, I'll tell you that. Sheriff Lupe Valdez announced she has under $50,000 in her campaign account.
For a statewide campaign.
Mark White has about $200,000. The other candidates are $10,000 here and there. Just to give you some perspective, Wendy Davis, at this same point before 2014, had $3 million in her campaign account, and she went on to lose by 21 points.
They kind of say, okay, we're going to run these candidates down ballot, but none of the heavy hitters on the Democrat side, these congressmen and different, Joaquin Castro and others, they say, look, I want to keep my seat. I'm not going to gamble my incumbency away to have this kind of lost cause campaign for governor. Abbott, very popular, and so looks like he's headed towards re-election. Listeners, I'd tell you, we can't cover it all. Go to TexasScorecard.com. Check out Brandon's profiles of these. We're learning a lot from these reports, and I think you can learn a lot from them, too.
Texas Scorecard Radio is a project of Empower Texans. At TexasScorecard.com or EmpowerTexans.com, you can find more news and daily updates from all around the Lone Star State. You can also find updates from Empower Texans and Texas Scorecard on Facebook and Twitter, and follow Empower Texans on Instagram. Texas Scorecard's news digest goes out weekly via email and monthly in print. Subscribe online and find more information at empowertexans.com. Someone's always keeping score. We think it ought to be the taxpayers.
Well, it's a pleasure to have on Texas Scorecard Radio this week Senator Don Huffines. Senator Huffines entered the Texas Senate in 2014 and since then has been a taxpayer champion. But we wanted to bring him on to talk about this growing scandal involving Dallas County Schools. And Senator Huffines will tell us about that organization and his fight to get rid of redundant bureaucracy. Senator Huffines, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me on the air, Tony. It's great to be here.
Yeah, well, thank you for coming in. Tell us a little bit about this most recent, over the last few weeks, kind of breaking news regarding Dallas County Schools, where we have a corruption scandal.
Well, yes, it's finally come to light that officially that the FBI has filed charges for bribery again, and will be filing more charges against the camera companies. And it looks like a couple of people involved, the superintendent and maybe the school board president of Dallas County Schools.
Yeah, and so you have criminal charges coming in as relates to school bus cameras, the camera company that was coming in. I think a fellow out of New Orleans came in and did bribery to get government contracts. But it involved this entity, Dallas County Schools, that didn't educate a kid. You know, it wasn't, it's a misnomer. People think of it as, the schools themselves, but that's not really true. It was this institution that handled the school buses and a lot of the bureaucratic elements. And you took on the task during the most recent legislative session of saying, look, this is a redundant bureaucracy and we need to get rid of it. Did you have any idea? Was there any inkling that there were these kind of corruption scandals involved with Dallas County Schools?
Well, not initially. When I first got onto the big task and lift of getting rid of Dallas County Schools, and it's important for everyone to understand that this is a remnant of the 1800s. The state of Texas was divided up into countywide school districts initially, and then after that, we had independent school districts, which were independent of the county. So this organization is one of the last two county school districts in the state of Texas, and it's a real political subdivision. They have taxing powers, and they have an elected board, and Dallas County and Harris County are the last two. And I noticed it on my tax bill, and I said, what in the world is that? And that's when I got into it, and really started analyzing it and realized it is just, like you said, a government redundant government bureaucracy, and it was treading in a lot of areas it shouldn't be. It was primarily providing transportation, and when they got involved in cameras and flashing people for passing buses and getting tickets, I smelled a rat. Because wherever you have these camera companies, unfortunately, corruption usually follows.
Yeah, and so, again, basically in 252 other counties, you have, I mean, basically every square inch of Texas is divided up into some independent school district. And, in 252 other counties, you don't have these organizations, but in, Harris and Dallas counties, you have these redundant old county school systems, and they're just there. So I guess the thought was, look, the ISDs in Dallas County, just like in Rockwall County or just like in Collin County, could handle their own administrative stuff. They didn't need a separate bureaucracy, on top of the bureaucracy of the schools. Is that right?
Oh, that's absolutely right. Look, they've done a good job of justifying their existence for decades. And they did that primarily by providing transportation to some of the school districts in the county. But they charged a tax that every business and property owner in the county paid the tax. And yet about 40 to 45% of the residents and school districts in Dallas County chose not to use their services for transportation. So as this group went out to justify their existence by providing transportation outside of the county, and then they got into different business ventures. And I think it's, important for the listeners to understand that this is a very large organization, 3,000 employees, multiple offices and property they owned around the county, headquarters they spent $20 million building. So And this was a big task to get them closed down, and it was a big job.
Yeah, you know, they say about government bureaucracy and programs is it's the closest thing we'll ever see never-ending, you know, life on unending life on Earth. This is a government bureaucracy. So I guess we're getting ahead of ourselves here. That we have been successful in putting Dallas County Schools on a path to closure. So let's talk about the legislative session. So you came into the most recent legislative session and said, "Look, this is a bad idea. This is something we need to do away with." Tell us about the reaction you got from other lawmakers and kind of how you were able to move that through the legislative process.
Of course. Well, first, I'd like to rewind just a little bit and let you know that this organization not only was corrupt, but they're really dangerous to the students, and they were providing a very poor service in bus service. And that it was really helped a lot being the catalyst in the legislation. And the legislation called for an orderly wind down of Dallas County Schools into transition period of a year where the school districts could would take over their own transportation, their own bus services away from Dallas County school district. But we had, it was an interim charge by Lieutenant Governor between the 84th and 85th. And during the 85th session, we actually ended up having three different hearings, one in the Senate and two in the House on the legislation. And when Dallas County Schools officials came down to testify, they always brought different groups. We always got a different story. And at that point, we knew the finances were in dire condition. We knew they were bleeding lots of money to the tune of millions of, over $1 million a month they were losing. They could never answer any of the questions straightforward. And then when they did, they would just lie. And it was very obvious that they were lying about most of their financial condition. And so that's what helped get the bill done and got a lot of the Democrats to support it. As a matter of fact, Tony, I had to have every Democrat and every Republican in Dallas County support the legislation in order to get it through the committee process.
And so eventually you ended up having all of these, you know, from a bipartisan effort to do this. I guess, you know, whenever you're involved in the legislative process and you come down to Austin and you lie about financial conditions and mislead legislators, I've seen this happen before where – you know, you think that there's this stark partisan divide, but one thing that will unite legislators is when government agencies and bureaucrats who kind of are under the supervision of the legislature start thinking that they're above the legislature. Suddenly, the legislators start to recognize that their turf is being encroached upon. So maybe that was part of that. I know that there was a compromise. So ultimately, as part of this gaining the widespread support for the bill, part of the compromise was that you would put it to a vote. So tell us a little bit about that.
Oh, that is correct. And that was an amendment put on in the Senate. And so the amendment called for the county to have an up or down vote to continue with Dallas County Schools. And we had that election. Regular scheduled election date, November the 7th in 2017, and we won.
Yeah,
but that was so the voters voted 58.5% to get rid of Dallas County Schools and abolish it, and then the legislation kicked in, and officially Dallas County Schools was abolished on November 15th, 2017. And we have a wind-down period now. Legislation calls for with a dissolution committee that will oversee the selling off all their assets and paying off all their bills.
So, let me ask or correct you: is it November 15th, 2017, or 18? When is it actually rolled?
It actually ceased to exist on November 15th, 17.
Okay,
but the dissolution committee will continue operating until the bills are all paid.
So it is done at this point. It's not. It's still in a kind of wind down. I exist, but I'm gonna not exist kind of status. It's the institution's gone, and then there's a process then to move those functions elsewhere. I guess, you know, what's really interesting to me is Well, and I want to know a little bit about what were the arguments in the election as you know, this went to the voters. You know, 58% of voters agreed with you, so 58% were paying attention, right? You know, knew what was going on. But what were, you know, what was the campaign like against this measure from the Dallas County Schools people?
Well, that's a very good question, and I think ultimately it was about jobs. I mean, that's generally what, unfortunately, unnecessary government bureaucracy is often involved, and that's the fear of people losing their jobs. And the other one was simply that they felt that it was being an added burden to different school districts to pick up the cost of the transportation, and that was debatable, because one thing that really helped a ton in the legislature, getting the bill passed and getting the election and winning the election, was that Dallas Independent School District, not Dallas County Schools, but Dallas Independent School District, which is the 14th largest in the United States, 157,000 students, was in support of getting rid of Dallas County Schools. And they felt like they could save a lot of money in their transportation system if they weren't locked in with these contracts with the transportation, and they thought they could almost cut their transportation cost in half.
Wow. Wow. I mean, you know, yeah, you are y'all, this is going to be worse, but the reality is efficiency and bringing things kind of closer down to the management level makes a lot of sense. Who has oversight? So if it's being dissolved now, you know, I'm really interested in, they have all the records that may show more of this corruption that the FBI is investigating. Obviously, you have law enforcement agencies like the FBI looking back through these various scandals. We'll keep an eye on how that goes. But who has, you know, oversight over these records to maybe go back and see, you know, what was being done wrong and right, you know, in the past?
Well, right now, the dissolution committee is, and the organization, it doesn't have a real name. It's being run by Alan King, and he was appointed by the committee, and he has all, the committee has control of all the records, and the committee was appointed by the comptroller. My legislation dictated how the committee would be formed and who would be on it, and there's each school district that was using their services has a representative on the dissolution committee, as does now the city of Dallas. And unfortunately, a lot of records have initially disappeared, and they're getting put back together. There was some industrial sabotage that went on after the election in the files and things, but they're getting that all put back together, and the people that are criminals hopefully will be brought to justice.
Yeah, well, I think that's an important part of this. Well, thank you, Senator Huffines, for joining us. Thank you for your leadership there in the Senate and kind of having the foresight to go after, to do something that a lot of people think is impossible, you know, eliminating an unnecessary bureaucratic government program. But it's something you've done and been successful to do for the benefit of taxpayers, for the benefit of the schools and the educators, and for the benefit, ultimately, of the kids. And so I really commend you for your work on the issue.
Well, thank you. And it was really a great experience dealing with this, and very rewarding experience, because they were very dangerous to the students and their transportation system, and certainly ripping off taxpayers.
Yeah. Well, thank you for your work on this, and thank you for joining us and being here on the program.
Thank you for having me.
Next in this week's On the Trail segment, we're talking to Carrie Cheshire with Texans for Fiscal Responsibility. Carrie, thanks for calling in. Last we talked to you, you were up in the Panhandle checking out some races up there. Now you've made your way meandering through different races down to the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex. Tell us about some of the races, the hot races that are going on there.
Sure, Tony. Well, just to start geographically, you know, kind of from the west, from where we came in, checked in with Beau French as he runs a rematch campaign against State Representative Charlie Guerin, one of the most liberal Republicans left in the Texas House, an original member of the Gang of 11, the Polo Road Gang of Turncoat Republicans, who installed House Speaker Joe Strauss back in 2009. somebody who partnered with Democrats to try and water down the sanctuary city bill that was passed into law earlier this year. Beau French came out to a late start a little bit because of the CPS scandal that I know you've interviewed him about on Texas Scorecard Radio.
Right.
But he's running an aggressive campaign, knocking on voters' doors, sending out teams, sending things in the mail, working aggressively to personally earn every single vote there in a House District 99.
Yeah, and I know he came relatively close last time, and so it's definitely a hot rematch and very interesting to follow. I know you're excited about Armin Mazzani running against Giovanni. A lot of big names here. Armin Mazzani running against Giovanni Capriglione there in North Tarrant County. Tell us about that one.
That's right. That's right, Tony. It's really interesting. A friend of mine said, you know, Mazzani Capriglione sounds like something I'd order at Olive Garden. Well, it's exactly the election matchup that we're facing up here in Tarrant County. Giovanni Capriglione came in as a Tea Party champion, dispatching Vicky Truitt and earning an A on the Fiscal Responsibility Index, being a taxpayer champion in his first session.
Yeah, this
but
is back
then,
in 20.
He sold out to the Austin lobby down here, down in Austin, and he's really generated a whole lot of daylight between his district. And so voters all across Colleyville, Keller, and Grapevine are very excited about Armin Mazzani, a city councilman in Keller, who is one of the few elected officials at the local level who actually has a good record of standing up for taxpayers and truth in government. And I'll tell you, he is running a very, very aggressive campaign, contacting voters, engaging citizens all across that district. And I think a lot of them are encouraged and going to work very hard to hold one of their own, Giovanni Capriglione, accountable to the taxpayers.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting race, kind of a records versus rhetoric sort of race. You know, Capriglione ran a couple times back 2010, 2012, came into office in 2013, and did okay, you know, did pretty good his first session. But then his record has just, collapsed over the last couple of sessions. Very liberal voting record this most recent legislative session. And the difference with Mazzani is, you know, he's running and he's criticizing that record and he has his campaign promises, but he has that local government record as well. So voters can kind of look at these two records and compare them, which is unique for a challenger. I wanted to talk also about Jared Patterson, the open race there with Fallon running for the Senate. Tell us about how that one's shaping up.
Sure. So just a little bit to the north in Denton County, Frisco, Little Elm, the Colony, Jared Patterson is running to replace State Representative Pat Fallon, who's decided to take his record of pretty much standing up for taxpayers, not an A on this most recent Fiscal Responsibility Index, but an 89, and running for the Texas Senate against Craig Estes, somebody who's kind of been a bit of a stumbling block for conservatives in the Texas Senate. So Jared Patterson, he'd actually run for state representative before against Angie Chin Button in Richardson, but has since decided to move his family and get involved in Frisco. You know, Frisco, was, when I was growing up, was just a little wheat field, and now it's just absolutely exploded. You know, you can't really accuse somebody of being a carpetbagger when everybody's recently moved into Frisco.
That's true.
Running a really, really strong campaign. He has a whole lot of local support from the grassroots coalition that, you know, protected and put Pat Fallon into office so many years ago. So it's a very good thing to see conservatives working to wisely steward the seats that they've managed to win in the Texas House. As we absolutely know, you can't win and change the Texas House if you can't protect the gains that you've already made. And
right.
We've seen kind of frustrating defeats for conservatives across the state. And it's good that grassroots activists and people like the Frisco Tea Party are working hard to get Jared Patterson elected in that seat.
Yeah, no, it's interesting to follow. It's great to see the enthusiasm that we're seeing out there, and just in all of these races, grassroots folks, getting out there and block walking and talking to their neighbors and making phone calls and putting out signs and doing all those good things. So, I appreciate all these reports you're putting up. Listeners, go to TexasScorecard.com. Carrie's putting up almost a report a day about these races. Very impressive and very interesting to read. And thank you, Carrie, for coming on and joining us, and look forward to seeing where you'll be a week from now.
Thanks, Tony. And as you've mentioned, you can go to empowertexans.com/onthetrail to see where we've been. And you can go to empowertexans.com/endorsements to see who we've chosen to support in these races all across the state of Texas.
Thanks, Kerry. Now here's Michael Quinn Sullivan with this week's commentary.
Candidates for public office tend to be great schmoozers. They can talk your ear off about their kids, your kids, the high school football team, the processes of the office they're seeking. But there's one question that tends to separate the candidates like no other. With the Texas Scorecard Radio Commentary, I'm Michael Quinn Sullivan. In 1979, U.S. Senator Ted Kennedy was a full-on favorite to replace President Jimmy Carter as the Democrats' nominee in the 1980 election. Polling showed that Kennedy was favored to win by a 5-3 margin. By almost any measure, the Democrats, who have done very well to replace the faltering Carter presidency in their primary, everyone knew he was an albatross around their neck. And Ted Kennedy, whose more talented brothers had been murdered in the 1960s, was by every measure the man to do it. Right up until the moment he sat down with CBS newsman Roger Mudd, who asked the question that stopped Ted Kennedy dead in his tracks. No, Roger Mudd didn't ask about the dead woman in Chappaquiddick, nor did Roger Mudd ask Kennedy about public policy, about taxes or spending or the Cold War. Nope, the question was, well, let's just listen to Roger Mudd's question and the answer. Now, please note, this is the raw audio, long, awkward pauses and all.
Why do you want to be president?
Well, I'm... were I to make the announcement and to run, the reasons that I would run is because I have a great belief in this country that it is, has more natural resources than any nation of the world.
And it goes on from there. Very awkward. Ted Kennedy cratered after that. His presidential ambitions never recovered. You need to ask candidates that same question. Why are you running for county commissioner, school board, state representative, whatever? We've seen this happen again and again. In recent years, we watched as Kay Bailey Hutchison couldn't provide anyone with a compelling reason to promote her from the U.S. Senate seat to the governorship. David Dewhurst couldn't explain why he should be a U.S. senator. Todd Staples couldn't explain what he'd done as ag commissioner or why anyone should want him as lieutenant governor. As was the case with Ted Kennedy, the inability to answer that simple question is often the result of knowing they can't tell voters the truth. The truth? Well, it's that they think it's their turn, the next step for them as a politician, their reward for being who they are. Fortunately, citizens recognize political ladder climbers and frequently reject them. If you start getting the "I believe in the strength of our community" pablum, or "let me tell you about my humble beginnings," you know you've got someone without a governing vision for their time in office. They want to be someone rather than do something. The beauty of that simple question is that it captures precisely the standard by which a candidate should be judged. Why are you running for state representative? Should be answered by the specific items they want to accomplish in their first term. If not, you can end the job interview there and move on to the next candidate. Same applies for mayor, school board, U.S. Congress, every position. Don't let candidates answer that question by way of telling you long, drawn-out stories about the circumstances of their growing up years or the values they saw in their grandparents. That's all great bio material, and it means very little. Good governance and bad governance arises from the specific actions elected officials take or refuse to take. How high your taxes will rise, how quickly police and ambulances respond to a call, the status of our military, the intrusiveness of regulators, none of those things are impacted by the quaint stories schmoozing candidates tell you on the trail. But it has to start with you, the questions you ask, and the answers you tolerate. Demand better, and we'll get better. With this week's Texas Scorecard Radio Commentary, I'm Michael Quinn Sullivan.
Well, that's all I have for you. Thank you for joining us. Come back next week for another episode of Texas Scorecard Radio. Until then, check out the reports we're putting out on a daily basis at texasscorecard.com.
Texas Scorecard Radio is brought to you each week as a public service from the Empower Texans Foundation and in partnership with the Lincoln Institute and this station. You can download podcasts from each program and learn more at empowertexans.com.